following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
To It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mara Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Charlie Saladino sitting next to me.
How's everybody today?
And that's about it. I have Tom Ross sitting with us.
Wait a minute, I'm here.
Oh, I didn't know you were still on the phone right now.
I was hauling. I was listening to all the commercials. It's great commercials.
Oh, good. Well, you're not in the studio, though.
Well, I had to come home because my daughter needed me. She wanted me to design invitations for a wedding. So, you know, I'm an artist.
You say it like it's a bad thing. You're supposed to go, I had this great thing. I couldn't be here.
It's our son.
He's on his way. He's actually listening to the show. He's in traffic. Good. So for those of you who don't know, Herman Snurcia, who was just talking right now, is actually at his home because he's making a design for his daughter's wedding.
Invitations, not the wedding.
You're designing your
daughter's wedding invitations?
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope they don't.
The creature will be on there.
I hope they don't have apes and amphibious creatures on.
So, if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on there, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb and listen to us on the online live streaming radio. And also on the GBB website, you have the webcam. You can see the three of us in the studio waving hi at 10-second intervals. And the phone over here is area code 631-888-8811. I'm going to take away with the news. I have two bits of very recent news. Actually, so recent I don't even have it on my news sheet.
That's the news sheet, folks.
The first bit of news is that my personal fan favorite, Adam West, has finally gotten his star on a Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Well, it's about time.
It only took, 50 years?
Did it say Batman?
And is that due to his Batman fame or his Mayor of Quahog?
I'm thinking it has to do with the Family Guy stuff. Because
yeah.
That's his resurgence in popularity.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about the Family Guy is that they never make one Batman joke. They always make it something completely different.
Yeah.
So he has a whole new generation of fans, and now he gets to star in the Walk of Fame.
And as Herman knows, and myself, because we're big fans of the show. I don't know. Are you big fans of the show?
Family Guy, yes.
Yeah. They, a lot of the stars that they portray in there, it's their voices.
Yes.
They actually stop by and do, which is hysterical.
Right.
I remember there was the one with the Thundercats. They did a Thundercat joke when I was upset that they didn't use one of the voices because I'm a big Thundercat fan. I'm like, why didn't they use that voice? And then I listened to the DVD commentary, and they mentioned that the guy had died, which was the only reason why. And I was like, and I felt stupid for saying that.
That's always a deterrent for not using.
They couldn't get his agent.
Yeah.
couldn't get the deal.
Yeah.
So moving along, the second bit of most recent news I have is that there is two in the Marvel Universe. There is two different universes. There's a regular line of Marvel comics, which have the, you know, Batman. You have Spider-Man, Hulk, Fantastic Four, Thor, the Avengers, all that stuff. And then many years ago, I believe it was about 15 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, they made a quote-unquote called the Ultimate Line, which basically has all the same characters, but try to have more of a modern appeal to the younger generation while still not alienating the original fans. So in this universe, the Ultimate Line, they are going to kill off Peter Parker, Spider-Man. They've been hinting at it for a while, and there's been rumors that they're not going to actually kill off Peter Parker. They're just going to, you know, make somebody else Spider-Man. But the issue came out, and Spider-Man is dead in the Ultimate Universe. Not the regular Marvel Universe, but Spider-Man is dead. And according to editor-in-chief, they say that they're going to have someone who looked up to Peter Parker as Spider-Man to come over and take as a new Spider-Man. So one, get rid of one Spider-Man, put in a new Spider-Man. And Peter Parker is dead. I actually saw the panel where he dies.
So. Like Journey to the Far Side of the Sun.
Yes.
And what happened in during To a Far Side of the Sun?
Tom knows.
I don't know.
Charlie doesn't know. Does Tom know?
Tom knows.
Yeah, yeah. It's well. Let's put it this way: the European name for that movie was Doppelganger.
Right.
Ah. Okay.
And without boring everyone with the entire plot, basically it involved a space probe to investigate a newly discovered world exactly opposite us on the other side of the sun, and it turned out it was. In some ways, like a mirror universe. I mean, not in others. It wasn't like the Star Trek mirror universe, but they wrote backwards, and there were subtle changes. And but just about everyone was duplicated, and a lot of it was them discovering that it wasn't a case of them suddenly having returned to Earth, but they actually made it to this new planet.
We were actually talking Great about movie. Charlie's evil doppelganger before the show started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that... one day as I was driving on Queens Boulevard and Woodhaven Boulevard, right by Queens Center, stopped for a red light, and just, it was a long light, so I'm turning around, I just turned to my right to see who was in the car next to me, and the guy turned to his left to see who was in the car next to him. We looked at each other, we looked alike. And we were just staring, and like the light turned green, and we both got beeped, and the shock of getting beeped, like, whoa, and we took off, and I never saw him again.
Yeah, but that was the 70s, Charlie, Miss Italian. There was a lot of chemicals used in the 70s.
It's probably better that you never met again. You know, in the German legend of the doppelganger, it's very bad luck to actually meet your. Doppelganger. The theory being that you can't both be there, so one of you has to go.
Well, one of he left first. he left first.
But I mean, I know that I personally have about 5 lookalikes running around. Yeah. Not that I've ever met any of them, but I know one of them went through. I went to 2 colleges, and not to brag, I have 2 degrees, but one of them went through college, my first college, like a year or 2 ahead of me, and everyone kept mistaking me for him. And then when I went to my second college, which was in a totally different part of the state, again, somebody went through it a year or 2 ahead of me, apparently was a lookalike, and I kept being mistaken for him. Then one summer when I was vacationing upstate, I was kept being mistaken for somebody who lived in the area, and then I was in Canada once, and I kept being mistaken for someone who lived in Thunder Bay. And then the most recent was about 10 years ago when I stopped for lunch at a pizzeria in a town I don't normally visit. I was there for business purposes. Mm-hmm. And the people at the pizzeria kept looking at me. And finally, one of them came over and looked at me in the space. He says, "Father?" I said, "Who?" It turned out I was an exact duplicate for one of the Roman Catholic priests in the local parish.
You sure the guy's name Rom Toss?
I have no idea.
So,
I said, this was about 25 years ago.
All right. So, moving along, I'll go to this bit of news. According to studio estimates, Green Lantern, the movie which we're going to be talking about tonight, pulled in $52.7 million.
And they were not happy about that.
Based on latest estimates, they were hoping more towards the $60 million mark. Originally, they were expecting this movie to be, you know, a $100 million maker, but the negative reviews after the initial trailer showed up, and then their expectations got lower and lower and lower, and it still didn't meet their expectations. So it's a long hill battle. They expected to be a blockbuster. Now it's barely did anything, so it's only going to go downhill from there. So I guess poor Ryan Reynolds.
Maybe they'll learn their lesson.
What lesson would that be? Don't make another Green Lantern movie?
Don't put a comedian in a...
No. The lesson is... Stop following one pattern of a superhero story.
But
you know?
the initial money that a movie makes is based mostly on advertising and word of mouth.
Yeah, the campaigning. Yeah, but
so even if it's a really
trailer,
good movie,
the trailer ruined that film because when he puts a suit on, he shows his friend. He says, "He's there, yeah, right? Isn't this great? I mean, that just put a damp on everything, even in the trailer."
So that means a lesson learned is that they should have had a better trailer.
Yeah, actually,
better campaigning.
Here's where Herman hollers at me. Herman, you're absolutely right, because the trailer where the suit came on and he says to the guy, "I know, right?" is so right. Ryan Reynolds.
Right. Ryan
so
Reynolds.
Everybody thinks this whole movie is going to be typical Ryan Reynolds, but I was totally surprised that he handled it well.
As you were saying, Charlie, you were saying that the lesson might have been don't put a comedian in a role of the comic
right,
book, but
exactly.
You got to look at Michael Keaton, though. He did a great job.
I was just going to say, but if the comedian adapts to the role, the comedian is an actor. He does more comedic stuff.
Right.
But if he adapts to the role, once Keaton started doing Batman,
great.
He started doing the serious roles. He was... He was amazing. I think Ryan Reynolds could be that actor if he
really.
I think he could adapt. I just think he's so typecast, and him himself is into that thing, that Ryan Reynolds thing. But,
what about Seth Rogen, Tom?
But no.
Here we go.
Let me tell you something. What he did to the Green Hornet was he should have been arrested. He should have been arrested.
All right, cause that's enough said.
Seriously.
But if you remember the marketing campaign for Batman, they didn't show any of the movie. I distinctly remember.
Right.
Well, the phone isn't ringing here. It must be
your phone. Phone ringing.
It must be your phone.
My daughter. That's right.
Wait, see, there you go.
Yeah.
So if you remember, I remember the commercials distinctly. They kept on showing empty stadium arenas, empty parking lots, and I said, Where's everybody gone? And they showed a bat signal, and that was it. So it kind of made you want to go see how well he does.
Exactly.
But in this one, they just kind of it was a bad marketing campaign. That's the lesson
learned. Didn't they do something like that with Fantastic Four? They just put the number 4 on there.
So it actually, I think they put too much out there in the product.
And sometimes what they put out there is the best of the movie,
right?
Which is, you like to go grab the promo department and just slap them around a little bit. So what are you thinking?
Well,
or what are you not thinking?
Yeah, I mean, you're showing all these spoilers. Why should anyone bother to go to see the movie?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Incidentally, another. Going way back to the 70s when the first Superman movie came out, I remember the trailer for that basically didn't show anything. It just had a voice saying, giving the spiel about, basically building up Superman to be a Christ-like. It was a space going by, the various stars' names zipping by in the heroic type.
Right.
And it all ended with the Superman insignia.
Yeah. See, that's marketing. That's advertising.
And then the catchphrase that got most people, you will believe a man can fly.
Mm-hmm. See, so
that was brilliant. That was the best superhero movie ever made right then and there.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, but we'll carry on.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, so I said it's a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
I was actually holding this bit of news for Hassan, but since he's not here, I guess we're going to have to go without him. According to Michael Bay, the real reason Megan Fox was fired from Transformers 2...
I know what you're going to say.
...was by the direct order of Steven Spielberg. Michael Bay says... She was in a different world on her BlackBerry. She was in a different world on her BlackBerry. You got to stay focused. And after the Hitler thing, Steven said, "Fire her right now."
Yeah.
Regarding the aforementioned Hitler thing, Michael Bay, what happened was, Megan Fox was being interviewed, and they said, "Oh, what is it like being acting in the movie?" And she was like, "Well, you don't really go to this movie Transformers to see acting. You see giant robots beating the crap out of each other, stuff blowing up." Michael Bay got offended by that, and he said, "What are you talking about? I discovered you. I'm important. I made you important. I made all these people important." And then she got upset about that, and she retaliated that on the set. He was kind of a bossy and mean director, kind of like Hitler.
Very Hitler-like.
I
read that. Like, very Hitler-like.
And then that kind of just went downhill from there.
Yeah. Some mistakes you just do not recover from.
So when asked about that, Michael Bay said about the Hitler thing, he said, "I wasn't hurt because, it's just Megan. Megan loves to get a response, and she does it in kind of the wrong way. I'm sorry, Megan, if I made you work 12 hours a day. I'm sorry, Megan, if I made you show up on time. Movies are not always warm and fuzzy.
And Megan, let's talk about the money you got for working 12 hours a day. Real people, the hardworking Americans in this country, bust their chops every day more than that for a quarter of what you made.
Yeah, it's as much as I love Megan Fox.
Megan Fox. But this is a reality slap, Megan. You're making bucks. And you know, just, you know, come down to the private sector and work like the real Americans, hardworking Americans.
You know, it's to hear any actor complain about how hard it is to do a movie is very off-putting.
Yeah.
Because the money that they do make and the exposure they get and the famous, you know, it's just, I can't empathize with that.
Right. No, nobody can.
So,
having
her fired because of that, it kind of makes me feel at least somebody's paying attention, but I still feel bad she got fired because...
Well, you know, exactly like Hitler right now, Spielberg.
Why are you saying that?
Because he said, well, he puts the order and fire her. Well, I mean, what, he's got the last word because he's
Spielberg? Yes, he does.
Herman. I'm going to go play with aliens,
Herman.
He has... It's his movie. He was the executive.
I know, but
he does have the last word.
I know he has the last word, but he's not keeping it consistent with the series, with the same characters in the series.
But that doesn't mean anything.
It does mean a lot of things for fans.
If you have the last word...
No, you're wrong. You're wrong here, because there's a lot of people that love Transformers. You know what I mean? You don't like, but these young kids that love Transformers and the movie Transformers, and they like to see consistency. Like, you would like to see consistency in your movies you love.
We call those young people idiots.
It's fair.
Because Spielberg has the last word. Everybody jumps. No, he's not being professional and not keeping the series and the franchise consistent. And another thing about the Transformers, they're too busy looking, these robots. That's why they don't look too good on film when they're fighting. There's too much things going around on in their body. They're too busy looking. And that's streamlined.
Maybe we're too old and slow.
I blame the
bottom line is the formula for that Transformer movie is, we want to bring the kids here, but we want to have the dads bring the kids, so let's put eye candy in it.
We don't care
whether it's Megan Fox or some other eye candy.
Right.
You know, so.
I know, Charlie, but there's also kids that are Megan Fox fans. You know, they love Megan. I mean, kids
they
are
love her
guys
so much they're not
13,
gonna not
14
see the movie.
Years old. What?
Well, wait, let me get this straight. The Michael Bay is now blaming... on Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so why does he even care who decided whether Megan Fox got fired or not?
Maybe he's getting some slack. I don't know.
Who cares if he's getting flack? He's got multi-billion-dollar movies.
You know who cares?
He doesn't
Another
like
movie's coming out, and he doesn't want anybody to be mad at him, so they all go see his
movie. Well, maybe
movie.
He's just
They're
trying
gonna
to...
They're going
to
go see Transformers. Nobody cares about him. Half the people who like Transformers don't even know Michael Bay is involved.
Right.
They're gonna go see it. It's a ridiculous ego trip to do a press conference to blame somebody else for having to fire someone.
Shyla did it last week.
Well, I know. The whole thing is ridiculous. Yeah. Nobody cares. Nobody's right. gonna care. That movie is not gonna make 1 cent less because Megan Fox is not in it.
Yeah. That's true. That's what I'm saying. Like, just because I don't like what's done, I'm still gonna go watch the movie.
Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, too, when you're deciding to drop someone from a long-running or running series, it's a balancing act. Will it be worth more viewers to keep them or lose them? And by invoking the name of Hitler, which is a name that still can provoke a firestorm of response in our culture, Megan Fox made a really bad tactical error, and Spielberg, who, if I'm remembering correctly, didn't he also do Schindler's List? So he's probably not very fond of references to the gentleman with the funny mustache. So he probably figured that by invoking his name, invoking Hitler's name in what's essentially just a petty actor-director squabble, she was probably making more enemies than gathering goodwill, and it was time to send a goodbye basket.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It's amazing. I'm just amazed by
nobody
this whole
accused Megan Fox thing of being smart, though.
That's true. She's not smart, Megan Fox. She's hot, Megan Fox.
Mark likes Megan Fox.
Some of us don't even think that she's that hot, so it's really no big loss.
She should have took a lesson with looking at Jessica Lange's films. Now,
why?
I believe King Kong was the epitome of Jessica Lange being the total idiot. She actually looked like, and all of a sudden, she started getting these good acting roles, and she started because
she had to act with a gigantic hand for about.
No, but she acted like an idiot, and down the road, we see that she did act.
She wasn't.
Because obviously we've seen her act a lot better than that.
Well, wasn't. I just saw that movie recently, and she's not really that. She's ditzy,
right?
But she's not stupid. I mean, as far as because she wouldn't make a good match with Jeff Bridges if she was an idiot.
Yeah, but you know. Old Dino. I make it a love story.
That's not a big King Kong film.
Yes, it is.
It's not that big.
Yes, it has moments. No, it didn't.
It does.
No. It's got moments. It's a great film because I saw it. That's the first King Kong I saw.
Yeah, you just made an impression on you.
It's a great film because of that. But having watched it recently.
Did I ever tell you I was in that crowd scene?
Yeah, you were.
Well, you were by the foot, right?
I was by where?
Really?
When you fell.
Can you be seen?
Yep.
Herman thinks
his elbow.
I got him right there. He had a big mustache.
That was the guy in the car that was
That's
there.
That's right.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges ran right by me.
It wasn't you.
Not Jeff Bridges.
It was the guy's the doppelganger.
What was his name?
That was
Doppel.
It was Charlie Chaladino.
I actually watched the new one again.
It got there.
It hit me right in the forehead.
On a dowel.
I just watched the Peter Jackson one again.
Yeah.
It is kind of excruciating to watch because it's very long. But it's a good film.
It's a good payoff.
But I think the issue that I had with that film is that it just became it kind of got hokey. But I remember when watching it originally in the theater, I didn't think the love story, the fact that Naomi Watts had kind of fallen in love with him as well, I didn't think that was corny. But then I watched it at home and I was like, oh God, really? It's a giant ape, dude.
You don't like spend a lot of time on that island.
That's cool. I don't have a problem with that. I don't understand why some people have a problem with some of the stuff.
I don't.
Some of the special effects and things that happened in that film were some of the most fantastic action sequences I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, like my point of contention always is it's a 16, 18 foot gorilla that drop kicks a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So I mean, where's the kid in you? You know how does that not appeal to the meat eating, the tree climbing young man in you?
In the first King Kong, the 1939, is it?
33. Yeah, I believe so.
33.
Yeah. Incidentally, you know, they still don't know how the heck the special effects guy got most of those effects. Mm-hmm. He took his secrets with him to the grave.
Yeah.
But that was from the era when special effects was sort of a cottage industry in Hollywood. And a director would just go to one of these cottage industry guys like Harrison and say, I need these effects. Please, can you do it? Please, 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 please.
Yeah.
And the guy would go into his garage and come out with magic. And nobody knew how he did it.
Well, Herman, you would be the expert on this. Wasn't Ray Harryhausen an understudy of this guy who did the special?
Wolf O'Brien. He was for Maya Jo Young. Ray Harryhausen did most of the
right, but wasn't he involved in the King Kong movie?
Well, King Kong launched his career. Launched Ray Harryhausen's career when he was a kid. He saw it. Then he was a teenager, a young teenager, and he was an understudy, like a assistant to Wolf O'Brien.
Yeah.
Wolf O'Brien was getting older, and we had a guy that put the skin over the dinosaurs, Delgado. His last name was Delgado, but this guy was he was a master. They didn't say they were foam rubber; it was latex skin over the foam in a wire armature. But you know it's how the irony it is in Clash of the Titans, You had Jim, what's his name? The guy in, that worked on Empire Strikes Back, Dennis Muren. He helped do Clash of the Titans and what's his name? Jim Jantroff, that did When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth, helped him do Clash of the Titans.
Well, this is all going back to what I wanted to say originally.
Go ahead.
I thought in the original King Kong, a moment that was brilliant is when he breaks the jaw of the Tyrannosaurus, and after the thing is dead, he's just
playing with it.
They just could have left it, and that would have been great. But he goes back and he plays with it. I said, "Yeah, all right,
that's what you do when you kill a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
You
start messing with you mess with the body,
trying to bite me, huh?
Because it's hard to kill a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
It was sort of like the Scarface of King Kong.
If I
look at you now you're dead.
If I killed a grizzly bear with my car, I'd play with it.
Well, as a matter of fact, I seem to recall that in the original one, when King Kong has the fight with the dinosaur, which I believe is also Tyrannosaurus Rex, and breaks its jaw, he doesn't have as big a scene playing with the broken jaw as he did in the later one, but they showed it a little bit, which is what made this the last King Kong so great. It was really almost a homage to the first one.
Yeah, it was. Peter Jackson loved King Kong. He made that film for himself. He didn't care about the audience.
Yeah, and it worked. Remember big budget films?
Yeah, well, the studio cared.
Oh. He was supposed to do that before Lord of the Rings.
Could we get off the island? No, the island is the...
No, I mean, the critics were all over the place.
But
the critics
are like,
are like, well, you want to see more Manhattan? Like, no, yeah. I didn't.
No.
You know, and the critics are like, you want them to get off the island earlier, and I'm like,
right.
No, I didn't. You know,
sometimes the critics aren't on all that.
Truthfully, it probably could have used a little editing around the edges. As a lot of people have noticed, it was kind of long, and some of the stuff could have been trimmed.
Yeah.
Not entirely dropped, but trimmed.
It would have only been
tightened
DVD.
Up.
Yeah, Tom, you got to see the uncut version. You got to see the
five-hour.
That's the one I have. That's the one I watched the other day.
He joins
like,
the cast of the Chorus Line in the middle of it.
He does. He goes. He puts a fedora on and he finds this medallion.
Putting on a ridge. That's what.
Yeah, and this big giant ball chases him out of a.
So moving on.
Wait,
my
that might have been Raiders of the Lost Ark
movie. So moving on to the last.
What's your last piece of news, Mark?
Last bit of news. Once again, is always sad news. Always sad news. So,
what? No, I don't want any sad news.
By the way, Hassan joined us in the studio.
I threw that in.
Yeah, you say hello, Hassan.
I don't say hello. I'm not a hello saying person.
Lou Sire Schwartz, one of the lesser known Bob Kane ghost artists on Batman, died on June 7th after a fall, according to his son Andrew.
After a fall?
Yeah, after a fall. For those of you that don't know, we actually was talking about Jerkenstein and how he likes to pretend that he actually does the work of real artists. Well, this guy was a ghost artist. So when Bob Kane, who created Batman, signed a new deal with DC in 1948, he hired Schwartz to help handle the workload. So basically the guy, you know, did most of the work, and then Bob Kane went over it. So that way you can say that it was his work. At first, he began with penciling the stories, letting Bob Kane do the actual Batman and Robin faces. So the faces were always Bob Kane's artwork. And then he inked and lettered the stories. Art experts can usually identify the work of this particular ghost artist for its extremely, for its time, detailed backgrounds and its frequent staging of action that vary greatly from the ones that Bob Kane drew. Since his work was mostly ghost work, his work was never credited in any of the books that he did from 1948 to 1953. He was 84.
Wow. It's good that they know who he is.
Yeah.
No.
You know, he was recognized at a convention.
Yeah.
You know, one guy talked to another guy, stories turn around, and they actually contacted him for an Eisner Award, which is one of the great comic book awards out there. And he got recognized, and so that's how they know that he worked on stuff with Bob Kane.
Well, just like Bud Westmore, he's another guy who takes the credit for designing the creature from the Black Lagoon. It wasn't him. It was Jack Kevin and a woman, I forgot her name, but he took it because it was Bud Westmore Studios, and he took all the credit.
Nobody knows Jack.
Yeah, Jack Kevin. He designed the creature.
Thank you.
If there's an art department in heaven, they've got one heck of a crew.
Well, they got one heck of a ghostwriter now.
I think before you go to the break, I think it's all right for us to actually mention the name of Jerkenstein now that he's been discredited.
Yeah. We don't have to, you know, because originally the original idea was that we weren't going to mention his name because we didn't want him to get any prestige off of our wonderful nationwide show.
Michael Bay, yeah. And, you know, all everybody listens to right now.
But now that he's been discredited, we can mention his name. It'll help people to despise him. Yeah. So we'll mention his name after the break.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be
You know, I would invite him on the show just so he could spew that ridiculous
Think how
theories,
famous we would be.
The ridiculous theories he has, you know, because he was on the same planet with somebody he collaborated with.
Yeah.
So, give him enough rope school of thought.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll be right back with it, Kingfin Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, by the street of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, welcome fame, he's ignored, action is his reward to him. Life is a great big thing, wherever there's a hang, you'll find the Spider-Man.
Look, up on the building, it's Spider-Woman.
And this is Jessica Drew, who as a child, while visiting her father's laboratory, was bitten by a poisonous spider. Forced to try an untested spider serum, Dr. Drew not only saved his daughter's life, but unknowingly gave her incredible spider-like powers. Dedicated to fighting evil while weaving her web of justice, it's Spider-Woman.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to A Game from Radio, your host, Mark.
Tom said we might get sued, so we're not going to mention Trick's
name. Tom Godwin, Charlie Saladino, and Commissioner Fiona.
They know who we are.
They might not. They might just be joining in
there
now.
They're not just joining us.
They might be.
And they're late. They deserve not to know what's going on.
All right. So this.
Well, it's quit screaming. You're not the leader of the show.
Hey, hold on,
you're not
Charlie.
The boss of us.
What, Herman?
You didn't get my message. I called you on the cell phone.
This has nothing to do with
God.
The show.
Mark, would you tell him I don't even want to talk about that?
Yes, he doesn't want to talk about that.
Herman, did you listen to the message I left you?
No.
No, right, because then. Why, Herman? Why? Why?
Because you weren't there.
Why?
Maybe the cell phone was in the car.
Yeah, and you shut it off.
Right,
he calls me. Calls me. He goes, Cha, call me. Call me back right away.
And then like, nah, he's
so
like
10 minutes later, I get to my phone. I pick it up. I call him. The phone is off.
That is the Herman train of thought right
that
now.
Is, that is the Herman.
Yeah, let me give you my phone number so you can call me.
And
not, yeah, right. That's not going to ever happen, Herman.
Let me live on the air. Herman, why would you call somebody?
All right, I'll pull you after the show, all right?
Oh, wait, now you're bringing
no,
it up.
No, I don't want to know.
How you want discretion.
Wait a minute. Now I don't want to know why you called me. My question is, why would you call anyone and then shut off your cell phone?
Because Tom had a problem.
I'm not
with
smart.
With what?
Forget, don't worry. Tom had a problem with the projector.
He's talking about work, so he's
all right, not you.
No, that's right. Different.
Another Tom. Okay.
Hey, the other doppelganger. Right.
Yeah, the Tom. Other Tom. Yeah, he looks exactly like this Tom.
But that's why you shut off your phone.
All right. So
anyway,
moving along.
Yes, moving along. Actually, this is a good transition. I did mention this is how we just had a little fun on Herman's behalf on the mindset of Herman's Nurture. Uh-huh. And this week we're going to be talking about the Green Lantern movie.
Really?
As I would like to call it, the Herman's Nurture of superhero movies. As usual, this is a free-flowing discussion, so spoilers may be mentioned. Normally, I go around the room and ask what everybody else thinks of the movie, but I think I want to go first this time. The movie...
Why don't you go first?
What
do
you think of the movie?
Was the Herman's Nurture of movies.
Explain what that means to the audience.
This movie... For anyone who listens to the show on any type of regular basis, was all over the place. This movie was just very disjointed. A lot of stuff was happening. A lot of things didn't make sense. And a lot of things contradicted itself in its own little movie world. And a lot of people I've spoken to who agree with these things still enjoyed it, which is fine. When I saw the trailers, it knocked me down a lot with my expectations. So I was going in very, very low expectations of this movie, and it still didn't meet those expectations. Although I have to say I was sucked in at the very beginning of the movie. I was sitting there thinking, wow, I think this might actually surpass my expectations. It's actually going to be a good movie. And then I think Ryan Reynolds couldn't hold it together when it came to the acting part that he needed to do. Special effects were pretty decent. A lot of story plot holes. So if you're not... And even if I'm an occasional fan of Green Lantern, so a lot of things that they had in there, I was like, oh, this is from the comic. But just putting that aside, watching it as a movie in and of itself, without it being a comic book movie, I'm like, man, this is a hot mess. This is all over the place. And what gets me is that in this movie in particular, as opposed to any other comic book movie or any other movie per se, if you remove the character and you put in a different character, the same thing could happen. So this movie, he was a very bad Green Lantern. As Hassan always said, how the Christian Nolan's Batman is a very bad Batman. This was a very bad Green Lantern. So that was my 2 cents on the movie. Who wants to take it next?
I'll take it next.
Charlie, what did you think of the movie?
I thought you were absolutely right. It was all over the place. And the proof of that was the funniest thing that I thought happened at the movie that night was... I'm watching the movie, and the proof that a movie's all over the place is if I fall asleep. So I'm watching the movie, and I'm watching it at this certain part, this guy, blah, 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 I'm not giving away. And I sort of dozed off, and when I opened my eyes, there was this whole other big scene, and I said, wow, I missed a lot of this movie. So to be nice to my fellow co-host here, I just kept my mouth shut. And at the end of the movie, we walked out and I said, okay, I fell asleep at this part. What happened between this part and the part where this was happening? And they said, nothing. That's what happened. It was this part and the next part. So in reality, I fell asleep for like 30 seconds. And it was, so there's your proof.
He thought he missed the whole scene.
And Hassan said, no, that's how it happened. And I was like, oh my God. So I agree with Mark. The only other little that ditty I have was that I thought, and I have to apologize to Ryan Reynolds, I thought he was going to do a pretty bad job because I'm in this Seth Grogan mind thing with the Green Hornet. But all in all, I thought he did a good job with it.
Hassan?
I agree with I agree with Charlie that Ryan Reynolds is he did better than I thought he was going to do. I thought he was going to be like, you know, from Waiting, you know, that from Blade 3. I think he ruined Blade 3, at least for me. And I thought, and he also did the same thing in the Wolverine movie where he was just like this ongoing talking, you know, wisecracking jerk.
But that is his character though, in Deadpool. That is who he's supposed to be. So he
actually
did that better.
It doesn't matter. It's Ryan Reynolds. It's just the way he does is very annoying. It wasn't comical. It wasn't amusing in any way. And then actually other characters were telling him to shut up, and you were like, I agree, you should shut up.
I agree with your movie.
Yeah. But he didn't do that in this movie, and I was impressed with his acting ability. I don't understand why people seem to feel that it is necessary. This may sound ridiculous, but it's necessary to show the origin of a superhero every time a movie starts, a brand new, you know, franchise gets started. Right. I understand it's I understand you start a story at the beginning of, you know, of where that story
most of the time. Yeah,
but it just, unless it's done correctly or the origin is an intricate story in and of itself, it just murders the story. It murders any, because you can't, for whatever reason, all these movies, they can't really pick up the pace after they've discovered their powers or whatever. They've you know, they've imbued their lead character with all these powers.
But now they, what situation?
Yeah, now the threat that's coming, it's never able to pick up steam, with the exception of Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie. But again, the whole first story is him discovering being Spider-Man, so that it was consistent through the entire movie. You know, they didn't waste a lot of time explaining the Green Lanterns. Ryan Reynolds becomes Green Lantern, and he goes to space, and they say, "Yeah, you're a terrible Green Lantern," you know, and there's not even a story arc after that of him becoming a good Green Lantern. It's just
like I said, he was a very ineffectual Green
Lantern.
Yeah,
you're mad at this, you know, whatever. They also did a great job with the origin, and as Herman said, with the original Superman movie. They told his origin, but his origin is very intricate. His origin is, you know, very Norman Rockwellian, you know, kind of scenery and all these little different incidents with his father dying and stuff like that. It's a piece of intricacy that progresses onward. Now, back then, they just made better films. Richard Donner was a heck of a better, right. and Bill Sienkiewicz, I think, I forget his first name, but he was. They're great filmmakers. They're great craftsmen. So they were able to turn a seemingly innocuous, like, you know, threat of, you know, Lex Luthor taking over nuclear missiles into a decent piece of storytelling. But that's because you're dealing with masters versus, you know, the schlocks that we have today. But every other great superhero movie has been introduced, has started with the hero already in the role of the hero. The Michael Keaton Batman movie, which you mentioned, he was already Batman when the movie started. The Crow, he kind of grew into it, but he was already dead when the movie started, and he just came out as the Crow. So a lot of this other, you know, Blade was already Blade before, you know, and then he told him, his mom got bitten. I was like, oh, well. You know, and that was it.
They told him to flash that.
Yeah, and it works. Right. I don't understand why these cookie-cutter movies seem to feel that it's necessary to go in-depth about an origin that isn't given much thought even in the comic books, you know? So Robert Nodell just didn't really give the Green Lantern a lot of thought. I was like, I drew this symbol and I put it on his chest. It was our equivalent to Superman, and we're done.
It was
another version of Superman, and we're done.
Yeah. Well,
so like, you're gonna have a movie, you're gonna multi-million-dollar movie, and you're gonna try to flesh it out somehow or make it interesting. You just can't. An alien that crashes on Earth and gives some dude a ring and a lantern and tells him say the oath, and then you know. No, if it dies.
Have a nice day.
Good luck. that's not an origin story. So if I know nothing about Green Lantern, and I don't know much, but I was never a big Green Lantern fan. I'm like, I need a little bit more, guys. I don't know what are these guys? How come these guys are flying in space with no breathing apparatus? I mean, I don't understand.
They didn't bother explaining.
No,
that.
They just said, right. We can fly.
That's the thing. That's in the comics. Like, it's just how it is. So they didn't bother explaining because it's in the comics. But then
exactly.
Certain points, they go to the comics.
If you're going to tell an origin, tell an origin.
Right.
Don't dedicate the first 15 minutes of a film to throwing the origin in there so you can get to the special effects extravaganza at the end. Make the entire movie about how this guy becomes the Green Lantern, and then take your time explaining to me how great the Green Lantern is, and who are these other 100,000 guys who are Green Lanterns, and how come they're not there? There's a giant threat. How come? Where are these jerks?
They went home watching TV.
There's a giant planet killing cloud. If we ever needed the Green Lantern Corps,
now it's right now. Nah, they had a day off.
Yeah, and the Green Lantern, the threat was the same as Galactus.
Yeah,
you know, and Fantastic Four. It was like, oh boy.
Can I go now?
Yes, Herman, you can go now. What did you think of the movie?
All right. I agree with Hassan. I agree with you, Mark. I agree with Charlie, right?
But
I'm going to talk about the director. This director saw too many movies before he made his movie. He used a lot of movies for reference as a blueprint to this movie. It starts out like the new Clash of the Titans, you know, with the narrator and the star fields and the crowds and the new Clash of the Titans. And then it goes into Starman, you know, when the alien dies, he falls to Earth, you know, and you choose the next Green Lantern. Then it goes, when he becomes Green Lantern, he goes on the planet and it turns into Star Wars. Like Jedi Masters, you know, with the sword fighting and the training and this and that. And then all of a sudden, a villain, this guy who turns villain that's dissecting the alien that landed on Earth, he turns into the Mask, starring Cher. Remember the Mask? You know, that guy, Eric Stoltz, whatever his name is, right? Then all of a sudden, he comes back and he fights the helicopter like the scene in Superman. And then he flies on the balcony. And I'm ready to hear, can you read my mind?
Superman fight the helicopter? And then Superman, when did he have that fight?
I don't remember. Save the guy from the helicopter drop.
Don't make it worse, Mark.
And then he gets the alien and he fights the smog monster, whatever that thing is, you know? This guy directly saw Star Trek. Remember the guys with the big heads with Jeffrey Hunter? The Star Trek episode, the guys with the big heads.
That's on the closing credits, Star Trek.
in the original pilot, the Tholians.
Those aliens.
They did. I was thinking that too.
The Tholosians. You know?
This guy did have no originality. I'm talking about the director now. Originality for the Green Lantern. He used all those things in a comic book, Herman.
Herman, all that stuff is in the comic book. The Guardians are in the comic book. So are the Green Lantern. So is Sinestro and the other characters.
The pacing in this film.
That's a different story. But if you're talking about he stole this imagery
from the movie.
He referenced the comic books. Whoever drew the comic books probably stole that stuff, but that's a different story.
That's actually an interesting point. Everything that was in the comic, it looked like all the stuff that was in the comic.
It was just a terrible story. That's the only problem I had with it.
Because I even liked
the actor, and I liked Mark Strong as Sinestro. I think he's fantastic. I like the whole stupid thing. Except for the story. I don't understand why the whole story couldn't have been about him becoming the Green Lantern. I don't know why they had to spend the first 20 minutes rushing him into the suit, into the role. There's also this other thing where it's the red herring, the first movie to really do this, to my knowledge. It's not the first to do this. The first time I noticed it was from Dusk Till Dawn, where you kind of set up
movie.
You kept kind of set up an entirely different film, and then you just reference, you don't make any reference to that for the rest of the film.
Right.
So he's a fighter pilot or whatever, and he's got this career where he's like a daredevil, and everybody wants him to slow down and stop being a jerk, and he cost them the military contract. Made him a lot of money and blah blah blah.
And he still cares about the family.
And the kid. Yeah, you never see that. They set this thing up with his nephew, all this other stuff, and oh, I'm a Green Lantern. And you never saw any of these people again. So there's a 4.5 hour version of this movie that's coming out on DVD. I'm not kidding because I said the same thing about Robin Hood. I said the same thing. Every time their movies come out this spotty, there's a lot more that has just been cut out because of pacing or because the studios decided they wanted it to be a completely different kind of feel. They call it development hell. That's why the movie was in that kind of free fall.
Right.
It's the same thing with Daredevil, how Spider-Man came out and made $1 billion. So Daredevil was more of an adult version of Spider-Man. The studio came back and said, well, cut all this other stuff out. Cut Coolio out. Cut this terrible storyline and just make it a lot more like Spider-Man so we could rake in the millions of dollars. Right. Also what they did to King Arthur, Antoine Fuqua's King Arthur. They cut all the violence out of Celts fighting the Saxons. But there's no violence. There was no blood. There was no violence whatsoever because they wanted it to be on par with the Pirates of the Caribbean.
So you believe the director's cut on DVD will be more?
I don't know if there'll be a story will probably still suck. But I mean, there are all these other plot points that they set up and it refused to complete.
Not even complete, like acknowledge, like halfway through the movie, to like
or embellish on every.
They were obviously at some point thinking of doing a strong fathers versus sons deal. Hal was supposed to have something going with his father, and then I don't even remember the guy's name, the guy who got infected during the autopsy, him and his father, that was obvious.
Yeah.
But it was never brought anywhere, which leads to my critique that I tend to agree it was all over the place, and it really, really, really needed a trip to the editing room. It needed about three quarters of it simply chopped away. And, you know, even with just the footage that was shot, you know, Hal Gordon gets the ring. Hal Gordon goes to Oa to be trained. Hal comes back to Earth to take on his first major challenge. That's your movie. Forget all the rest of this crap. That just did nothing except confuse the issue and give you a headache.
Boiling this movie down, it was basically a cop movie. That's what it was. Green Lantern is an international cop. That's how they're playing it out in the comics. That's what he's supposed to be. So by using cop logic, you see certain things in the movie where it doesn't even follow that. If a cop quits the force, you give him the badge and your gun. If Green Lantern quits the force, he's still Green Lantern. So what did he actually quit? Like what did he do in this movie?
And the problem is, you got to take, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but you got to take everything you have in these comic books and then write a brand new, a cohesive story that works in a 2-hour format. You can't keep trying to throw in all these other plot points and these other storylines from the last 30 years of Green Lantern comic books because it is going to come out like a mishmash. Like that. Here's the other example of the superhero that was well established already, the Ang Lee Hulk. Versus the what's his name?
Warner
Norton. Ed Norton Hulk. Where he was already the Hulk when it started. The incident, the gamma ray, all had... So they had nothing to do but tell you a full-fledged story because they got past the origin part of it.
Which was shown in the opening credits of the movie.
It was shown in the opening credits. Also, it was done in flashbacks.
Yeah, and they actually use all the other stuff that was out there to help you be, you know what's going on. They use references from a TV show, all that stuff. Throw it all in there. We're done. This is what happened.
Yeah, versus the Ang Lee one where it's like, that movie's unwatchable.
I think the problem is that a lot of people aren't that familiar with Green Lantern, so you gotta.
Doesn't matter.
You
make them.
Something.
You get a good writer, a good storyteller, and you make them understand. I'm telling you, if he started the story out as Green Lantern, as just a bad Green Lantern in training, and it was the full 2.5 hours of him building himself up to being a hero.
So they started
that would have
from
been
when
a,
he was on the planet. Right?
Doesn't
when
matter.
He, when
no,
he came over.
I mean you started anywhere. You don't
no,
even
I'm saying that's
not using. But you're referencing this story.
Oh, so we're not.
Skip
we're just
the story. You know, started out wherever the heck. All he's right. Green Lantern. He's training to be a better Green Lantern because he's lousy at it.
Right.
He becomes good at it just in time for this horrible planet-killing thing
think,
to come out
I
of
think
a,
guys, I think
come out of left field, and then he stops it, or he's an integral part in putting a stop to it. And that's it. And that's your story. And the story is good, as opposed to
the
story being bad.
I think you guys are missing the message.
We're not missing anything.
What is the message?
I think you guys
we got 3 minutes. What is the message?
The message is, don't forget, kids are 12 years old or 14 are watching this movie. And I think the message in this movie, the most profound message in this movie that the director or whatever, the writer's friend,
by the
is to conquer your fears. You know
did you see that message in the movie Conquer Your Fears?
Yeah, when he had to go fight the creature himself.
He was supposed to have no fear. That was the whole point of
Daredevil,
the Green Lantern.
With Green Lantern.
Green Lantern is a man without fear.
Just like Daredevil.
Yeah, so that was the point.
So we have about 2 minutes left. So we're gonna go around with the final thoughts. Herman, final thought: should people go see this movie? Wait till the DVD.
Yeah, those
what,
are 2 minutes.
What is your thought?
I think the 3D was phenomenal in it. The 3D.
All right. So
I think it's a good popcorn movie, and that's it. Forget about it. You see it once.
All right. So you're telling people to go see the 3D version.
The 3D is phenomenal. I think they spent the millions and millions of dollars on the 3D process.
All right.
It doesn't hurt your eyes.
All right, Charlie, what do you think? Go see
I
it,
think,
don't see it. Oh, you are Mr. DVD, so Mr. DVD.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think that The directors these days should, when they're making a superhero movie, get off their pedestal, get off their ego maniac pedestal, and hire about 50 to 100 people who are aficionados in the comic book and get their views and then put a story together based on that.
Right.
A
big think tank.
Hassan, final thought. People see it, don't see it. Well, actually, Charlie, do you see it, don't see it?
Go see it.
Go see it.
I say go see it.
You say you go see it?
I don't recommend you see it, but I think everybody should see something and decide whether they like it or not without hearing it from, you know, from the side.
I say once again, wait till it comes out on cable. It's not worth seeing. If you really need to see it, go see it on a cheap day for the 3D. The 3D obviously was a great effect. I didn't get a chance to see it. But I say cheap price is the only way to go. Otherwise, don't even bother with it. You recommend it for people, Tom?
It's better than nothing on a hot summer's day. However, if there's something better playing at the multiplex, go see that and wait for the DVD.
Wow, with such
it was better than Super 8.
Great reviews that we're getting out of here.
And I have to disagree about the 3D. I thought it was a total waste.
Oh, look at that. See? So there you go. So that about does it for this week. Hannah Kane from the radio. Join us next week right here on WGBB. If you miss any part of the show, you can go online to www.hannahkanefromtheradio.com and your archives will be up within about a week. If you can't wait that long, you can always go to You can always go to places such as Podcast Planet or iTunes. And as always, all the news items that we have here on our Facebook page and our Twitter page. We will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.